Today in the Packet Pushers Weekly Show, optics. You know those transceivers you buy from the same vendor who made the switch because someone told you if you buy non-vendor branded optics that God will kill a kitten? Well, what if you had a legitimate option for optics where you didn't have to buy the overpriced vendor transceivers that, and then God leaves those kittens alone? And more importantly, the TAC doesn't give you a hard time when you call in for support. Our sponsor today, Interoptic, loves the kittens very much, and they believe that they have some optics you'll want to buy. Joining us today is Tim Dixon, CEO at Interoptic. Tim, now, Interoptic, you guys have been around for quite a while, actually, 12 years, I believe. So would you give us a little background on the company back in 2005 when you started? What was going on that drove you to start this company?
Sure, Ethan, it's very simple. We saw the same dichotomy that you have in terms of pricing, what the OEM is doing to that end user, that end customer. We saw that because our background is in telecom. And years ago, even kind of mid-80s, we started working with the Finisars of the world, the HPs of the world, helping them spec optics to IEEE standards and really knew what the cost structure was and still know a lot of those folks. And with that big gap there, we've focused on transceivers and said, hey, look, you're not getting the value you should. We can give you that value. So we worked with supply arrangements and got that going back in 2005. So it was pretty simple business then. As we've transitioned, it's becoming a little bit more complex, but we can talk about that.
So is that the core of your business then? I mean, you guys are selling transceivers, Ethernet transceivers specifically, or is there a broader range of what you do?
Yeah, so we focus on the data center. So what is consumed in the data center? We call it data interconnect, and we've gotten broader than transceivers at this point because we see what is happening in the data center. We can talk about that a little bit, but layer zero is becoming more and more important. You'd think, wow, that's pretty boring stuff. But at the end of the day, it isn't, and we can talk about why.
You know, from one standpoint, I could say I'm a network engineer. I'm buying a switch, and I got to throw transceivers in the thing so I can plug in my cables and get everything connected up. Is that you're saying this term data interconnect? Is there more to what that means to you than just you're selling transceivers?
Yeah. So let's talk about that a little bit. So the statement you made is exactly what the OEMs would like that statement to be in the minds of their customers. Hey, don't worry about it. It's just light. Throw in the cables. It's just like a cable. Just put it in there. The fact of the matter is we see a lot of performance issues, a lot of range of specmanship that are going on in the transceiver world today. And frankly, the volume of what is being deployed on the optic side is much greater and continues to grow at a geometric pace. So you're really in a position where that could be a ticking time bomb if you're not doing the right type of optical qualification, the right type of optical specmanship, being able to have the highest quality supply chain in place, do the logistics that you need to do, really focus on it as an expertise. That's where we sit in terms of them, our customers, needing to never, ever have issues with anything at the layer zero. They want to forget about it, but they can't forget about it if they're not buying the highest quality product.
One of the things that the vendors often say is you have to buy our optics or they're not supported. So what you're sort of saying there to me is that your business stands behind the optics that you sell.
Yes, absolutely. So not only do they get piece parts from us, they get full engineering that back ends both the, we can help them with optical architecture. We can help them with, differing interfaces because we actually sell more transceiver SKUs for Cisco equipment than Cisco does themselves. And that goes the same way for all of the OEMs. We support such a broad range of platforms. So there might be some certain applications. And in fact, we've gone through and designed specific applications. Some of our customers.
Yeah, I want to just pick up on something there that a lot of engineers don't understand is that SFP modules are actually computerized in their own right. And what I mean by that is they have code and processes and things like that in them that need to be maintained and updated.
That is correct. You hit it on the head. So, our background is building large switching systems deployed in Verizon, AT&T at one time, 85% of the traffic in the world went across one of the platforms we designed back at Tel Labs. So high availability, large switching systems, embedded software. That is our background. So we focus on how do those transceivers fit, not just, hey, it's a widget or, hey, it's a chip. A lot of people might know it from kind of the chip level. A lot of our competition are just distributors trying to, you know, skim a little bit of money off of the transaction. But in fact, our background allows us to not only know the optical architecture, the exact application it's going into, but also be able to black box, reverse engineer what's happening inside that Nexus 9000 to make sure that our transceivers never skip a beat.
So you're making the distinction there between you're not just a reseller for, you know, something that's been manufactured. You stick a label on it and push it out the door. You're actually involved in the engineering of the modules themselves.
Absolutely. So we do that in two ways. So let's be fair, right? I mean, the way it works is you spec tires. If you're a GM and you Impala tires, go out and buy a bunch of Impalas, you're going to probably put a medium grade tire on that because you're buying so many if you're GM. We instead spec Corvette tires as appropriate because we know how important it is. So we work off the same, you know, assembly lines, get, you know, higher quality product off of that because of our relationships with them. But more importantly, we do all the coding here in the U.S. in Naperville, Illinois, and we don't allow that to come out of China, Malaysia, anything like that because, you know, we feel that we're going to have more control end-to-end and what we place in our customers' network.
And that's the key to understanding why third-party optics can be successful. You can have poor experience with third-party optics when, you know, somebody's just taken a piece of code that was shipped by a factory who just wants to ship a product and they're not interested in the after-sales support. So I think what you're trying to say, or you're indirectly leading up to, is there is a difference between just buying the cheapest optics from company A in China to buying them from somebody who's actually writing code and software and, you know, able to troubleshoot them and make them work kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, we have suffered over the years because third-party optics actually got a black eye, right? Because people would try these things, they wouldn't work. Even today, some of who are considered our competitors, you have to suppress alarms for them to actually plug into an OEM switch. You have to suppress alarms because they're giving off alarms saying, non-compatible, non-compatible, non-compatible. That doesn't happen with our transceivers. We know how to design and code those things. OEMs aren't actually perfect in what they do. They actually make mistakes, and we even have to implement the mistakes to get our transceivers to work exactly right in those boxes.
So there's a couple of clarifying questions I've got for you, Tim. One is, we've been talking about transceivers broadly, but we've also been talking about optics. So just to be very clear about the type of transceivers we're talking about, does that include copper media, or are we strictly talking light, fiber optic?
Yeah, so it's dominated by optics, but you're correct. We also sell tees, we sell copper, we sell a broad range. In fact, a lot of our customers love that because whereas the top OEMs are going to try to move you to a different platform and kind of do that by forcing new interfaces, we continue to support older interfaces for a very long time, and our customers like that.
And the other question there, the other clarifying question, you know, you're mentioning OEM gear. So this would be, let's say I'm buying a Cisco switch and I could also, off that Cisco parts list, use a Cisco SKU to buy a Cisco branded optic. And that would be an OEM optic, but in the context of what we're talking about here?
Yes, that's correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so Arista does the same thing and Juniper does the same thing and, you know, and so on. You're saying, you know, Interoptic manufactures a transceiver that when I plug it in, it looks to that Cisco box or Juniper box, et cetera, like an OEM optic.
Yes. And in fact, our strongest vertical segment traditionally has been the federal government. We're deployed in the DISA backbone, the top tier backbone for the DOD. Also in kind of the largest Navy, Marine Corps and MCI, NGEN now very regularly shipping into that. The thing about that is they spec'd these transceivers. We helped them rewrite a contract so that it was no longer Cisco bundled, but we saw transceivers as a separate line item. They didn't call it third party. They didn't call it OEM compatible, they called it OEM equivalent. So they used a separate term to specify our optics in use in the federal government because they knew they had to have that kind of compatibility.
Interesting. Okay. This is happening sooner in the show than I anticipated, but this is a great conversation to have. Now, I have been involved with a lot of these over the years. And you know, so for example, I used to run a small data center backbone that was based on Arista. And if you plug in a non-Arista transceiver in, there's a... If you complain loudly enough to Arista support, they will say, all right, so to suppress the alarms and allow these transceivers to work, we are here's a command, and they give you this undocumented command, and then it quits whining at you, and you can go. But they always give you that caveat and say, but you know, if we have any problems, we could point to those transceivers and say, hey, we're not going to support you because you're not using Arista-branded transceivers.
Sure.
So, okay. Now, as big as you guys are and with the sorts of customers that you have, some really high-profile, well-known customers, it can't be any secret to Cisco and Arista and the rest of the people that Interoptik exists and a lot of people are using their transceivers, your transceivers, and their products. What's the stance on all that? How is all of that handled? I mean, obviously, you're eating into some pretty mighty profits that these guys make off of these products.
You just have to look at it from a business perspective. At the end of the day, this is a commodity market, right? And we embrace that. You know, you used to think you had to buy your Dell memory from Dell if you had a Dell laptop. You didn't. Kingston could make it better, cheaper, faster, higher performance, so you went to Kingston. This is going to happen. I mean, there is just no... Look at 150, 200 years of tradition in technology and, you know, any kind of industrial revolution. When you see a commodity market, it's going to disenfranchise OEMs. So I'm going to say that as a blanket statement up front, but at the end of the day, if you plug in an interoptic transceiver, whoever's providing your service contract, they can't tell that it's an interoptic transceiver. From an OS perspective, it looks exactly like a Cisco transceiver. Now, if they go down into the line item and do a query at the very lowest level, they will see Interoptik in one of the bytes instead of Cisco. Okay, mm-hmm. So, but up to that point, they cannot see it. Now, also practically think about how they use SmartNet. You're going through, you see some, you're troubleshooting, you start doing some isolation, you say, okay, it's not the admin, it's not the motherboard, it's a plug-in card. Oh, by the way, it's a particular interface. Oh, we're doing loopbacks on both sides. We can't exactly tell, but it looks like it's on this link. Well, even then, they cannot specifically say it's a transceiver. They're going to look at the DOM and try to see if there's, you know, level issues and that kind of thing. But at the end of the day, it's either this side of the transceiver, the far side of the transceiver, or the link. In fact, most of the time, it's the link. So they've gone down to the level of troubleshooting that they're going to go to, and they're going to stop. So the person that's on the site is just going to look and say, hey, is there a light on that? You know, is it blinking or is it not, right? And then, you know, flip the transceiver out. Whether it's Cisco or IO, the exact same thing happens. And, you know, there's nothing that, you know, is going to change in terms of the practical operational experience that happens in these data centers. It just doesn't.
Yeah, practically speaking, I would agree with that. I've heard the threat come from the vendor about not using their optic or using their transceiver, but I've never actually been in a position where I had to call in for support and they refused to support me because, hey, we took the inventory of your chassis and saw these optics, and so therefore we're not going to talk to you. That's never ever happened to me because, and my opinion here is that they want your business. They're going to support you no matter what. So unless there's some extremely obvious reason why it would be, you know, that optic that's got a problem, they're going to ignore that. That's just not going to be an issue.
There's only one thing in the OEM business model, their P&L and their profit stream, that makes more money than optics. And that's their service contracts. So are they going to piss someone off and cut off a service contract when it's one of the most actually the most profitable thing in their business besides optics? No, they're not going to.
Well, I think there's a few things I've certainly seen in the lower end of the market. So when you're not a big player, the technical support people will blow you off, especially since most of the vendors have outsourced their first level of tech support. And it's in that they actually have financial incentives not to escalate your case. So literally they are financially rewarded in gold on not escalating cases up to Cisco, you know, to the vendor who owns their support contract. So if they can get away with saying, oh, you haven't got vendor optics, and then you say, oh, well, okay, then they will do that to you. They will literally, you know, give you a bad day.
Have you ever seen that? I've never actually experienced that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I would say maybe there's an outlier where that happens. I can tell you from experience, they will always, I mean, you know, it's their job. They're going to lay it out there. They're going to use some FUD. They're going to try to rattle the sword. But at the end of the day, at a practical matter, once that transition is made and they're very clear, the customer's very clear with their vendors to say, this is what we're doing, it's never affected their service.
Yeah.
I can just say, by the way, we wrap our, you know, our equipment with the same and probably better logistics about getting product into the hands of our customers if something goes wrong, which it hardly ever does. But we also have sparing programs like you should. We can do depoting if we need to. We can log on to their equipment and look at, you know, optical power levels and everything, just like a third tier tech for an OEM, if that's what they would like to have. So we work with the people that are in the data centers. We contract with them. We work with them hand in hand on kind of that optics part of the network. And we feel that that's one of the advantages of having us at the vendor table. We can talk about this, and I think we should, but the amount of optics that's going in, this is becoming a more and more important part of what a large Fortune 100 company should look at. Cisco isn't going to provide you the expertise in optics that you need. You know, we were at a Global 100 yesterday. That's what they said. They said, we are so upset. In the past year, we have had significant performance problems. We try to get this worked out with the OEM. They have no answers. They can't tell us what's going on. And so, you know, you need to have the right people in the right seats around the vendor table.
So let's talk a little bit about the technology that's inside an SFP. Is it just literally a chip of a certain type and anybody could, you know, program one of these things? Can I reprogram the firmware on that myself?
So look, some people even have business models where they'll sell you a programmer. You know, we can't get around that. You know, so yeah, I mean, that's what we do. We buy blanks. We just happen to buy blanks from the top tier optical suppliers and, you know, coming off the same physical line as the OEMs and though spec to our, you know, our standards. So yeah, we get blanks. That's what we do. But we also have spent tons and tons of time reverse engineering and figuring out how these work in every platform under every condition. And like I said, we know that optical architecture and what's happening there. So.
And so if I'm, let's say here's a situation that I'm standing up a new data center and it's Greenfield, I'm assuming I can build out my switch parts list and so on from the vendor, line cards and power supplies and the chassis and all of those things, and then go, okay, Interoptic, here's my build sheet for this data center build that I'm doing, and I need optics for this. I'm going to need some 10 gigs, maybe some 2550, some 40, and some 100. And then you would what, flip around a parts list that's going to meet those needs?
Absolutely. And, you know, where do they want it drop shipped? And, you know, how are the logistics? We pride ourselves on logistics and, you know, getting, we've never had a situation where they were waiting on optics. Let's put it that way.
And so I'm buying from Interoptic directly then.
We have had in the past relationships with CDW, Ingram Micro, all the big boys. At the end of the day, our customers tend to be better served if they buy directly from us. They have, you know, direct service, engineering support. I mean, I can get down to some specifics, right? I mean, we do serial number tracking of every individual part. We do interim testing of what does the laser look like? What does it look like when it goes on the board? What does it look like when the can goes on? What does it look like when it leaves the Asia, right? What does it look like when it comes into Naperville? And we do individual testing on every transceiver. There's no OEM that does that. There's no, I mean, I don't know of any third party that does it, although they might claim it. But we actually do that physical testing of every part. And this is the view of what we're trying to do, this traceability, is from our telecom days. I mean, you don't see that in the data world, but we could give you a report. And we have had people call in the middle of the night, you know, pick up the call. We go log on to their systems. We say, hey, no, this transceiver hasn't deviated at all. The power levels are the same. There's nothing wrong with the eye diagram. This is what we've seen over the past 6 months. So it must be something else in your system.
But again, it's not, yes, you're delivering a top quality product and level of service, but the big sell here is that you're also delivering at a cost savings. In other words, one of the things that you spend an enormous amount of money on in a data center build is populating that switch with optics. It comes without them, and then adding the optics ends up driving up the cost. In some orders, that's roughly half the cost of the build is specking out all of the optics. You know, if I go to Interoptic, you know, one of the big reasons I'm doing that is not just what the optic is and how you track it and all of that, but also the fact that I'm saving a significant amount of money. It gives me a lot of dollars back in my budget that I can put into other things. Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly. So let's get down to the nuts and bolts, right? They probably wouldn't look at us unless they had an economic advantage. So we definitely provide that. But you could do that if you went and bought them off of eBay too, right? Maybe even better economic advantage. Our argument is that's not where it stops. And especially as we see the data centers growing, we see kind of this, you know, demand from the edge with 5G, 4K HD, you know, IoT, this is going to swamp the data centers that we see today. So if you aren't doing optics correctly now, that layer zero correctly now, you're going to just bury yourself in problems. And frankly, you know, we're in a situation where we've reached the physics limit of what we can do in optics. So everything is going parallel. So we're going to have a more nimble layer zero inside the data center in the years to come. And we're here to do that.
So, okay, you mentioned, right, things that are driving more traffic in the data center. 5G eventually is going to get there. IoT starting to pick that up. 4K, higher data streams going around. I've got a friend of mine who does audio work and is talking about some data streams he's dealing with, 1.2 gig of a single data stream. So what optics are you seeing pick up in sales? I mean, is it 100 gig? Is it the 2550 market beginning to take off from Interoptics' perspective?
So 100 gig for sure. We're shipping that today. So, I mean, and yeah, 25 drops for sure. 50 gig, not so much, but, you know, you never know. Things always change. But we support the full range of all those future products. So we're looking at 200G right now. It's we don't deliver it right now, but those are the kind of things that we look at all the time. But it's more than speed.
Mellanox announced some switches with 200 gig.
Yeah,
so
sure.
We're starting to see that, and like, you know, none of the other vendors have actually announced shipping products around 200 gig. Only right. Mellanox has. So it's sort of, that's an emerging market there.
Yeah, exactly. But my argument would be it's really more than speeds and feeds, just like it's more than just cost. You know, we fundamentally think there are going to be some pressures inside the data center that are going to say, hey, you know, is it better for us to do, you know, kind of wavelength manipulation, wavelength switching, instead of terminating every one of these things all on a big router box, right, or a big Ethernet switch. So I think you're going to see kind of a migration to, you know, kind of a smarter optics layer in the data center over the next 5 to 10 years.
So what you're saying there, I think, is you're actually saying the optics themselves are going to become networking devices. So we've seen SFPs as coarse wave division or dense wave division, but most of the manipulation of the bandwidth has been done in the switch or in
After you terminate that line, right.
So the SFP module has literally just been like an adapter, you know, optical to electronic, serial signal comes in, plugs it into a parallel bus kind of thing.
Yeah, point to point.
Point to point. And what you're saying is that we're seeing the SFPs become intelligent in their own right, and they can actually start bonding together multiple fiber optics or multiple channels into whatever you need. Is that what I hear you say?
Well, so, you know, you could say it's in an SFP format. I would argue that there might be something in the interim where you are actually doing wavelength manipulation at a very low cost, at a very compact size that are needed at top of rack, or, you know, kind of peppered around that data center to help you more efficiently work with the in the optics realm.
So what does that look like then? Let's just drill into that for a little bit. So if I'm listening as an engineer and I'm going like, oh, that sounds interesting, what does that mean? Is that longer haul, longer distance, like 2 kilometers over a standard single mode? Is it bonding together multiple fibers in a single SFP?
Yeah, I mean, the thing about the data center, which is different than the long haul, so I just want to kind of look at some contrasts here. You know, if you go and talk to Verizon, you know, and they kind of put forth the fact that, yeah, we will never switch from single mode. That is what we have installed. Any solution has to be in that realm. Well, you know what? The data center isn't the same way, right? I mean, yeah, you have a lot of single mode. You do have some multi-mode, but you know, you could actually lay in a completely separate layer, let's call it multi-core fiber, where you have multiple cores, be they single mode or multi-mode, 6, 8, 10, 12 cores inside one physical fiber housing or sheath. And so you can then add that more complex layer at the top of your hierarchy and get some bang for the buck in manipulating wavelengths in kind of that realm before you drop it off into one of your large routers or your end of line switch.
So what you're saying there is that you're actually able to muck, say, normally 100 gig, which is 4x25 gig lanes, you can mux that onto a single pair of single modes for, you know, some distance. You're sort of suggesting that there's SFPs coming which are for more than 4 channels, like 8 channels or 16 channels on a single pair?
Or even fiber that has multiple cores inside it. So you have right. 4 or 8 inside a single mode, but then you have 8 of those single modes inside a sheath, right? So
okay. So you wouldn't be using a standard LC. You'd be using like an MPO, which has 8 cores presented in a standard RJ-sized socket. You plug that in, there's 8 cores. So why don't you send 400 gigs down that out of one SFP?
Right. Yeah, and start manipulating chunks of that before you drop it off. So
all right, I've got it.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, there are a number, and again, this is early days. We need to work on the standard side of things to get things moving there. But really, you know, at the end of the day, you know, we've reached the Shannon limit on fiber. So we have to be able to do more inside, you know, kind of at that layer zero realm, so that we can be efficient as we build out these very large data centers because of the demands that they're going to see with IoT, just the number of endpoints. And yeah, you know, you can work on fog layer and all kinds of things to try to keep it localized. But at the end of the day, you are still going to have a huge demand inside the data center.
Now, you mentioned the physical limits a couple of times now, Tim. So I think there's a couple of things here worth mentioning. One is that I'm curious about is what is the practical fiber optic limit for how much data we can push down that link over what distance? And then the other is copper, not copper going in between switches, let's say, but the issue of dealing with an electrical trace on a board. So you go from the optical input on front of panel, and then you've got to convert that signal to electricity on the board with what we have currently, because we haven't made the leap yet for switch internals to run on photonics. And so we have a challenge there electrically as well. Do you have comments on those things?
Let's step back. So first on the limits, I should probably send you a chart. You know, it's something that is readily available, right? It's from Alcatel and some things that have been done in the past. But basically, you saw a 78% year-over-year increase in optics capacity from back in, you know, kind of the 1960s through 2010. So for 50 years, you saw that. Well, until we reach the Shannon limit on a single fiber, and now, since 2010, we have essentially zero growth, zero growth in the amount of traffic that you can ship across a single fiber. And it's a physics limit. You're not going to beat it, okay? So no wonder you've seen parallel, you know, usage of lanes on fiber, right?
And again, that Shannon limit. So this was new to me. I just Googled while you were talking about that. So that's right. Quickly defined by Wikipedia. The Shannon limit is the capacity of a communications channel. It's theoretical maximum information transfer rate of the channel for a particular noise level. So as you're dealing with
noise level, it's optical signal to noise ratio. Yeah, right.
Got it. Okay. So
it changes for length. It changes for, the standard kind of parameters. But at the end of the day, we've kind of reached that limit. Okay. So for long haul, you get more headroom when it's, shorter distances. But at the end of the day, we're nipping at that limit. So something has to be done. We have to go to parallel. But the more we go to parallel, the more complex things are happening and the more more costs that go into electrical boxes. So, do we want to look at ways to solve some of these things in the photonics realm? And my argument would be that as we see these data centers growing, we will need that some of that.
Practically speaking, though, with photonics, that isn't coming as quick as we thought it was going to. I mean, we've been hearing about photonics on this show for, for a few years anyway, but we still haven't seen a commercial product come. And the last thing I heard was from Arista, where apparently photonics is challenging enough to get right that mass producing a photonics-based board in a switch is sort of a big deal, and we still got challenges that way.
So there's a simple implementation. If you look at my LinkedIn, we did this back in 1997, 1998, 1999, but it's used at Google. They use a photonic switch in Google, at Google, right? They see that as an advantage. Now, this is a simple photonic switch. It doesn't have any wavelength manipulation. It's kind of dumb kind of thing, but it's in use today. So it's a 256 by 256 photonic switch. And, I worked with John Bowers and those guys at University of Santa Barbara way back in the late 90s to develop that product. We're speculating and kind of pie in the sky stuff, but what I'm trying to say is just look at the dynamics. So if you had a growth rate of 78% year over year, you go to essentially zero growth rate now from 2010 to 2017 and in the foreseeable future. You look at a Cisco VNI, kind of their projections at overall capacity growth of 26% or so. You look at 86% growth for compute power at the highest level. You look at kind of averages of where other people think it's about a 50 to 55% growth rate. You are going to get to a point where internet traffic, internet capacity, internet demands are going to cross over that zero line, that zero slope line of optics. And it's a ticking time bomb. It is. So, as much as OEM vendors want to tell their customers, oh, it's just a transceiver, don't worry about it. Well, they're doing a disservice to everybody in this industry because of it.
Well, let's bring it back to interoptic then. So as we advance with the speeds of the and the technology, therefore, to get those speeds of the new optics, when does interoptic say, okay, we are going to offer a 200 gig transceiver. We're going to offer eventually a 400 gig or maybe an 800 gig transceiver as this develops over the next few years. When do you guys jump into the market with that product?
Again, I think you've dropped back into the speeds and feeds. So we will always be able to keep up with the market and enter at the right time because of our partnerships with the top suppliers. So we are already working on those advanced technologies, and we will have those available when the knee of the curve hits in terms of usage, right? Mm-hmm. And actual practical demand in the marketplace. So speeds and feeds at the right value proposition, that's always part of our nature. Now, the question is, are there more complex products that are needed in the data center? We're working that right now with some of our larger customers, trying to understand what their needs are, where we can add advantages, as they become more and more comfortable with non-OEM solutions, which are just rote solutions, are there ways that they could advance what they're doing in the data center? And, you know, I can't give you a specific timeline on that, but we will see those that transition happening, and we want to be at the core of that.
You answered the question, though, which is, when the customer demand is there, we're going to have a product, you know, no question about it. In other words, you're very aware of what the needs are, and when the demand is there, you'll be able to meet that demand. It's not about coming out with the latest and greatest thing that, you know, one customer might want someday. It's about, okay, we're seeing significant adoption of whatever the product is, and you will therefore be offering that product at that time.
Well, even to the point of working with customers to help define that product. So to define those new, you know, layer zero platforms that they might need or look at or provide them advantages. Yes.
Okay.
I mean, from our point of view, you know, we want customers to go out and pick best of breed routers, best of breed firewall, best of breed security, right? But we think they should look at best of breed optics in everything that they do. And we hope to be there to do that for them.
So companies that want to engage you guys, that want to talk to Interoptic and find out more, where do they go? Where's the best way to get in touch with you guys?
So the easiest way is just to log into our website. We have contacts. We have some super people that are industry veterans that, you know how to not sell, but help. And so go to the website, you know, do an inquiry. We'll be right there to help you.
That's interoptic.com. Just
that's correct.
Yep.
Interoptic.com.
Comes right up. And apparently you guys have a Twitter handle as well, at GetInterconnect. At GetInterconnect. So if you're listening to this and you are interested in Interoptic, tell them that the Packet Pushers sent you. Now, Tim, just curious, are you personally someone that is engaged in social media? You tweet or you blog where people could follow you personally?
So all I have is a LinkedIn page.
Okay.
So they can definitely get me there. I do answer that often. I do look at what's going on there. But that's about my limit. I just don't have the time.
Yeah, that's a pretty common story. People that are very busy getting things done often don't have time for social media, so we get that. Well, that will bring us to the end of the show today. Thank you, Tim, and thank you to Interoptic for sponsoring the show. Without our sponsors, hey, we cannot do the research, the writing, the podcasting that all of you that listen enjoy here on the Packet Pushers Network. So you can find this and many more of our fine free technical podcasts along with our community blog at packetpushers.net. You can follow us on Twitter at Packet Pushers. You can find us on LinkedIn. Like us on Facebook. And hey, take a minute and rate us on iTunes. We've seen some fresh comments come in lately, and we really do appreciate that. Just take a minute, go into the iTunes interface, leave us a comment, and that does help the show to grow. And hey, take a minute, tell a coworker that you really appreciate them. Wouldn't that be a nice thing to do? Last but not least, remember that too much technology would never be enough.